Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Welcome to Space Floor NBA Podcast. My name is Connor Gielan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
And this is our 103rd official episode. It is currently February 12th, Thursday, 6 p.m. So the trade deadline passed 3 hours ago. There's still some small news rolling in, but the main things, the main pieces have fallen. We have a ton of big names moving today. James Harden, Ben Simmons, and in the past days, we had C.J. McCollum, Caris LeVert, Tyrese Haliburton, Domantas Sabonis, Chris Porzingis, Spencer Dinwiddie. Insane. Definitely one of the best over the past few years.
I agree. There was a lot of buzz about, like, would this be a trade deadline where there was a lot of hype and then everything kind of just busted. And I was talking to my friend on the bus, like, 5 minutes before the James Harden trade happened. And we were sort of like, was this all just sort of like talk and now it's just not going to happen in time? You know what I mean? And then, like, as I'm getting off the bus, like, the notification comes through and it happened. You know what I mean? So it was, I think we were like not that far off this being sort of like all talk and then nothing and then kind of falling flat. But no, like this, as you said, turned out even in the last like couple hours right before the 3 o'clock at February 10th deadline to be one of the best in recent memory. So we got a lot to talk about this episode. Really excited to get into it. Let's start off with the James Harden trade though. That's the big one, the highlight.
So anecdotally, I was taking an econ test from 12:30 to 1:45 on my laptop, and then I just see like all of a sudden my text start blowing up on my laptop, and you know it's a big test I have to do. I'm like, bro, like there was rumors with Harden like as I was getting ready to take the thing, so like I couldn't help myself. I went to the text. I just see you at the top of it, all caps. Yeah. I love the NBA. No context whatsoever. I'm like, bro, it happened. And so with like 20 minutes remaining, like all I can think of with this test, I'm like, I wonder what the package is. Like, I wonder, you know, what they had to give up for Harden. They had to give up a lot for Harden.
What I've been saying like all day sort of since the trade happened is Brooklyn won this trade. And I believe that like pretty firmly, but at the same time, I think if you're Philadelphia, like the bar to like for it not to be a loss for you is actually not that high. As in terms of like value for value, Brooklyn walked out of here with an all defensive first team player, a guy who's a top 25 player in the NBA when he's playing, right? Seth Curry, who's not all-star caliber guard, not even that close to all-star caliber guard, but is a easily like a starting guard in the NBA, will come in and supplement their guard rotation next to Patty Mills and next to Kyrie Irving, especially for the games where Kyrie Irving doesn't play. Incredibly important, incredibly useful. Dude's like has like the highest career 3-point percentage, like pretty much ever. Like he's a menace, right? Like a huge addition. I know we talked about this earlier a little bit before the podcast, but even just the addition of Andre Drummond. So this is a 3-for-1, right? Three guys who could arguably be starters. Andre Drummond obviously was coming behind Joel Embiid, so he hasn't been starting for the 76ers. Might not start for the Nets because they have Claxton, they have LaMarcus Aldridge. But you just picked up by, like, you know, rebounds per 36 minutes or, like, rebound percentage, whatever, pretty much the best rebounder in the NBA right now, right? He's not going to give you too much on defense. He's not going to give you too much on offense. Sometimes he thinks he's Jokic out there with the passes. Like, oftentimes Andre Drummond looks like he's doing too much. Or he's trying to do too much. But in terms of just straight up rebounding for a Brooklyn Nets team that we've been saying since they traded away Jared Allen has been in desperate need of like some rebounding and defense from the big position, got a great rebounder. So on top of all of that, also just got 2 first-round picks. I think that package, if you're the Nets, like, and you have to trade Harden, great. You're thrilled with that.
Yeah. So for context, the 2 first-round picks are Philadelphia's unprotected first-round pick for this upcoming draft with the right to defer to 2023, which they might do because Philly's going to be pretty freaking good with Embiid and Harden, as well as a top 8 protected 2027 first-round pick. So who knows what, you know, Philly is going to look like back then. all the way in 5 years from now. That being said, this is basically a 3-for-1. Technically, it's a 3-for-2 because the Brooklyn Nets also gave up Paul Millsap, but at this point,
but he wasn't in the Nets rotation, right? Yeah, the talk was that the Nets were going to buy out Paul Millsap, but they had agreed they were either going to buy him out or trade him at the deadline because he was no longer in the rotation.
Yeah,
there was a report from like a month ago.
Yeah, so he's basically a zero in the sense. Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and 2 first-round picks. So where my mind originally wandered was, okay, if you like, does this speak more about James Harden or about Ben Simmons? Like what could Ben Simmons have gone for? Because he's been on the trade block for a year now. There's been there had been talks of CJ McCollum, but you know, instead you get James Harden. But then my mind also wonders, like, yeah, but you know, they're also throwing in like another great player, two picks, and another solid player. So I don't know if this actually tells us about, you know, were they smart to hold Ben Simmons that long? I just think it speaks a lot to the fact that they went all in, including Ben Simmons, packaging him for James Harden, who, again, when at his peak, top 5 player in the league. Joel Embiid finally gets his perimeter score. Now, when I say perimeter score, I mean a guy who is going to create and actually score from the outside, because perimeter scoring, Jimmy Butler was totally that guy. And even Tobias Harris is a little bit that guy.
Seth Curry, but prior to this, like Seth Curry and Tyrese Maxey were Joel Embiid's pick and roll partners. And now you have James Harden coming in. That is like unequivocally a big upgrade, right? And so that's huge. And I think that one of the things that was really important in this deal happening for the 76ers was that they got to keep Maxey. I think the similar deal was probably on the table if they traded Maxey, not Curry, and didn't give the 2 first-round picks. But I think if there had been the same 2 packages and it was like Daryl Morey can either choose to keep Maxey or keep Curry in the 2 first-round picks, he keeps Maxey. I think they're that high on Tyrese Maxey, and I think that's the reason that this deal didn't happen like over the summer, right? So this was one of the things that I criticized the 76ers a lot for this year, right? And I feel like I actually owe Daryl Morey a bit of an apology, even though I'm saying that Brooklyn won this deal. I was saying, like, how did the 76ers mess this up to the point that, like, they could have had James Harden in a trade for Ben Simmons, passed it up, and then sat on him for half a season? Well, they still got James Harden, right? Like, that's, like, the what if of, like, you almost, like Daryl Morey still pulled it off. So kudos to him for that. There's going to be, on a very sidetrack, and we don't have to go into this, like, there's going to have to be a tampering investigation, though.
Dude, yeah, I was about to say that. It has to be all but guaranteed.
Yeah, like, right? Like,
this sounded like it was freaking free agency, the way that James Harden...
And it's just, I hate the way that the report came out that it was like, James Harden wants out, but he's not going to request a trade. He's afraid of public backlash.
Ridiculous.
Like, you just requested a trade if the public found out about it, right? Like, for all intents and purposes, like, if you don't request a trade, but Woj reports that you want a trade, you're just too afraid to say you want a trade, you requested a trade.
Like, yeah, and also, like, someone tells Woj that happened. The reason that Woj and Shams can get into these positions is because they kind of make deals with players that it's kind of like a mutual thing. It's like, you know, like, if you want something to leak, I'll leak it for you. But when I want to lead, you also help me out. James Harden, in all likelihood, either like gave the thumbs up or was the actual one that gave Woj that tweet. So the deliberate asterisk of, you know, but I don't want you guys to be mad at me. Like, that's the epitome of, here's my opinion, my bad. Like don't, please don't be mad.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say from a professional, who, you know, makes millions of dollars every year, but I guess that's what we subject him to with all the scrutiny.
It's a classic, like, no offense, but it's like, no, like, just don't, just saying no offense before doesn't change what you say after, right? Yeah, no, it's a really fascinating situation that, like, this is a team that I think before this trade in the Nets, like, a lot of people would have considered to be the favorites to win the NBA title this year, despite all the turmoil and whatever's been going on. And by the way, like, I was just talking up James Harden in our All-Star draft last episode. So as much as people are like, oh, you know, James Harden's washed, he's not the player that he was, not as big of a deal for the Brooklyn Nets at face value as you might think because he's not playing that well this season. Like, I mean, I'm still a believer that, like, James Harden is still James Harden. Situation, circumstance have changed. Like, you put him with Kevin Durant. the Nets have had guys in and out of the rotation all season. Like, I know one report was that Harden was upset with the way the spacing was, like, with the Nets, but like Joe Harris has missed a lot of time, for example, right? And Joe Harris is
a lot of time.
Consistently above 40% free throw, 3-point shooter. So it's a really, like, I hope they do a 30 for 30 someday on like how this whole situation came about, that it was like both Ben Simmons and James Harden wanted out so bad that both teams were desperate enough to like make this deal happen, because in some ways it makes no sense. And in other ways, like just situationally, it makes a ton of sense. I'm really excited because I think one of the things that I think both teams kind of benefit from this, even though I'm saying that Brooklyn won, because Brooklyn gets a lot of depth here. I already mentioned that now you have a 3-guard rotation of Curry, Patty Mills, and Kyrie Irving. That's sick, right? You still have Kevin Durant, and add some rebounding in Andre Drummond, who, like, I think their big man position was probably their weakest the Nets before this. You're relying on a well past his prime LaMarcus Aldridge and a Nicholas Claxton who's well before his prime and still very raw. Having somebody who's, I guess, sort of like in between those two and Andre Drummond, just to throw something different out there. Like, I just think this is just a much deeper team than it was yesterday.
I think it's a much deeper team, but specifically Andre Drummond, I don't really think offers much for them. I don't think he's a game changer by any means. Like, yes, he's the best rebounder in the NBA or like top three or whatever, but that's probably the least unique or least valuable individual main skill that you can have in this league. That's why, you know, like 7 years ago, he was an all-star and now he's a backup. You know, he didn't get particularly much worse on either end. It's just his utility became less, you know, important to NBA teams. Mm-hmm. He can't really offer that much on the offensive end. He tries to do too much a lot of the time. Tries to make passes that aren't there, oftentimes having a few Shaq and a Fool moments. And then on the defensive end, he honestly can be a revolving door. I remember it started way back when Joel Embiid like sunned him on national TV.
Yeah.
Just in general. Like, I don't mean to rail on the guy too much, because like, I think he's a good backup big man, but I don't think he's some sort of answer for the Brooklyn Nets. Like, if I'm looking.
No, you're right. You're right.
Out of both first round picks, Andre Drummond, Ben Simmons, and Seth Curry, I think he is the least valuable asset out of all of them by far.
Sure,
or
sure.
The least valuable.
I just mean to have a third center that's playable is good, right? Like he was coming off the bench behind Joel Embiid, but like he's playable. You know what I mean? Like that's, so I just think like the depth that you're getting here, right, and the defense that you're adding, I think is really good. I think one of the criticisms for the Nets has always been like there's only one ball. We only watched by the way the big three play 16 games together. You know what I mean? True. So like will we ever really know like what that would have looked like? Like not to its full extent. But a lot of the criticisms, a lot of the things you could have said, like, okay, their defense, their rebounding, their depth, their shooting, like I think they added a little bit to all of those things, right? Like, and maybe you lose a little bit of playmaking. James Harden's averaging 10 assists per game. Maybe you lose a little bit of shot creation, but like you lose shot creation in a team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Like I like this move for Brooklyn. I think it makes Brooklyn a lot more dangerous. And I've been talking more about Brooklyn than I've been talking about Philly, but the 1-2 punch of James Harden and Joel Embiid is absolutely nuts. And don't think for a second, don't get caught thinking that James Harden is like washed, is like not the player that he was 4 years ago. Like if you think that, James Harden's going to come out and like punch you in the mouth. Like I'm sitting here almost guaranteeing it. Like this, the 76ers are going to be a legit threat to come out of the East this year, like on the back of Joel Embiid, but also like on James Harden being like his right-hand man, like running the show.
Yeah. And honestly, I think James Harden is definitely going to play better than he has even in the first half of the season, which is still an all-star caliber level, because he's going to have the reins again. Whereas before he was a definitive B to Kevin Durant. And I just don't think that really works for him. That's not to say that's like a character thing or that's not a bash on him. It's just, you know, he's good at certain things and less good at other things. You know, he's still like led the league in assist, but we weren't seeing MVP Harden or we weren't even seeing all NBA first or second team James Harden. Right. And I think that will change, because he will be bringing up the ball every time on the court. If someone's attacking from the perimeter, it's going to be him. He's going to be the guy who's the maestro. And I think Joel Embiid can play off of that just as James Harden will play off of Joel Embiid in a way that is more fluid and more defined.
It's cooperative.
It's cooperative because there's a big and then there's a guard. Whereas
it's the classic Shaq Kobe, right? Like,
yes. Whereas in Brooklyn, it was, you know, we're all three on the perimeter. It's weird. It's kind of just you pass and then you just kind of stand there while they go to work on the perimeter. And by the way,
there's no taking turns with James Harden and Joel Embiid. Everything should be fluid and together, right? And I think part of the thing with James Harden is like a lot of Windhorst's reporting the last couple of days was about like, look at the effort that James Harden put in. Like, he played all these minutes and he only scored 4 points. And that's like not even mentioning his defense. There was some report that was like that. And so I definitely butchered that quote. But it's like James Harden, I think, consistent. And there was also, it happened in Houston, right? Before he like asked it of Houston, where he just like stopped trying. As much as I hate that as a basketball fan, James Harden has shown that like when he wants out, when he's not happy with the way things are going, because I do think that he's a bit of a like locker room problem, complainy, like I need my way or I'm just like not going to try and I'm going to be like kind of pissy. Like, I do think though, when he's happy and when he thinks he's like the one like leading the winning and in like in getting the credit, like I think he's still one of the best players in the NBA.
The duo of James Harden and Joel Embiid as a guard and big man duo, I think has to be the best since Kobe and Shaq in terms of just talent. Cause I'm trying to think what like,
well, like Dwayne placement Wade in like Shaq, the old time. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Like Dwayne Wade and Shaq in like 06, but like present day Joel Embiid is better than 06 Shaq. You know, like that guy he was an all-star. He wasn't an all NBA player. I don't think.
Well, Shaq could be, Joel Embiid, like at least before this trade was like an MVP front runner, maybe the MVP front runner. Right. So like, and that'll also be another thing to watch is like Joel Embiid is on a tear right now. Does that get amplified or does that get, I guess, sort of like nullified by the Harden?
Yeah, I think it'll take a few games to get used to because, again, Harden dribbles the air out of the ball. You know, he's great at it, but he dribbles the air out of the ball. And so that disrupts the offense. And then the offense will reform and it'll be re-sculpted somewhat around James Harden. And I think that'll be great. I honestly think that before this trade, because they were getting zero utility out of Ben Simmons, I would have had Philly in terms of like East power rankings. I would have had them at like 5 behind the Bucks, the Nets, the Heat, the Bulls, probably in that order. Honestly, maybe switch the Nets and the Bucks. Now I have Philly at 3. I think Bucks and Nets are neck and neck, and Philly's a very close 3. Like if you're,
I would say that 3 is like in a category of their own too. Like the Heat, the Heat are dangerous, but I don't think they have the same. Like they just don't have the same talent level, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that wasn't true before, right?
No, agreed. Both of these teams, I think, are like a step up from where they were, especially Philly, I think. But I think Brooklyn is improved from yesterday, just because I think that there's like some questions answered. Overall. Go ahead.
Okay, like you said, like Brooklyn won the trade. That does not mean that Philly lost the trade. I think like both teams, it was symbiotic. Like both teams significantly better. I think that I probably had the Bucks coming out of the East before this trade. I think I we're going to have to see how it meshes. I think the Nets are going to have a better record than they would have if they just stayed out. Like, I think they're just going to like go on a like almost like a Warriors like tear at the beginning of the season, or like a Suns when they won like 12 in a row. I think that's going to happen with the Nets at some point. And you're going to like the Ben Simmons hate is going to go away. Because by the way, Ben Simmons with a lot more shooting, lethal. But I think those two and the Bucks are definitely in a tier of their own. And I can't wait for the playoffs. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, the other thing about the Ben Simmons thing is like the bar is significantly lowered for what's a loss the trade because Ben Simmons is not going to play at all this season. One of the things that I had been saying earlier when we were talking about Simmons rumors was you're looking at a prime Joel Embiid who is healthy. Like, this is the longest stretch of healthy Joel Embiid that we've ever seen, and it's also the best season of Joel Embiid we've ever seen at the same time. If you don't take advantage of that by trading a very valuable asset who has not played a minute for you yet this season and just turning it into something, that's a loss. right? So even if you have to give up more value than you got in return to get Ben Simmons off the court, like you turned a zero in terms of on-court value, but that was a very high off-court value into just like all on-court value, right? Even if it's not equivalent. So that's what I'm saying is like, in terms of just like one for one, Brooklyn wins the value here. But Philly was also in the more desperate situation. And so like, I'm also not considering it a loss for them. I give this, you know, like a probably like a B or better for both teams. And like, right. Like that's, I'm very optimistic about this.
For both. I think this is the best case scenario.
We'll have to see. Like, I think it's too early to call. Like, as you said, we have to see how everything meshes, but I think everybody here is happy with this outcome, right? Like Daryl Morey and James Harden, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. The only guy that I'm curious about is Kevin Durant. And I know there's already been reports that like Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant have talked, but like it seemed like Kevin Durant was trying to convince James Harden to stay. The report was that like Steve Nash is like, no, you know, James Harden's not getting traded, which is also strange, by the way. It seems like kind of all parties here are happy except for Kevin Durant, which is just interesting to watch. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So you give it B or above. I'm probably going A, both teams. I'm a huge fan of this. And I think this is one of the trades we can truly see that both teams won. Who won more? Probably whoever wins a ring first, because one of these teams probably going to win a ring in the next 3 years. Man, I would think.
It's very possible, right? Place.
The NBA is a crazy place. I don't even know.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to keep an eye on because I know – I forget even who it was. Somebody said today, though, on TV – I think it was Stephen A. Smith said that, like, this could be the worst day of, like, Daryl Morey's career. I think that's BS. I think that's a terrible take. Like, even if this doesn't work out, like, you turned a terrible situation in Ben Simmons into – what the fourth best shooting guard of all time or something like that? Like it's like okay, like let's be realistic here. You know what I mean? And if it doesn't work out, like I didn't see that coming. I think James Harden and Joel Embiid are a match made in heaven. We'll see though.
I agree.
Let's move on to the next trade. The other one from today, the other big blockbuster, because you won't get to every single trade. There's just too much that happened. Is Kristaps Porzingis being sent to Washington? I think this one holds a little bit of extra value to us as Knicks fans because we were upset when he got traded to Dallas. So what are your thoughts on him being in Washington now?
So, yeah, this kind of blew my mind at first because at face value, I would think that Kristaps Porzingis would be the more valuable asset versus Spencer Dinwiddie, especially because Spencer Dinwiddie has had his worst season in, like, at least 3 years this year. Just
from when he's been healthy.
Yeah, from when he's
been healthy. Because he missed a lot of last year.
His efficiency has been down. There's talks about how he's just not gelling with Washington. There's locker room problems. And so we probably expected Dinwiddie to get traded today. I did not expect Kristaps Porzingis to get traded today. While there's urgency in Dallas to do something different to help out Luka Doncic, especially with the injury of Tim Hardaway Jr., I did not expect them to just, you know, blow up the two-man group that, you know, when us Knicks fans were sad about Porzingis going away, everyone on the internet was like, oh, these two white dudes are going to run the league for the next 10 years. How's that looking right now? You know, you got back, you know, two guys who are probably overpaid and you had to give up a second round pick to do it. It's Kristaps Porzingis, second round pick for Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans on a really bad contract. Ever since he was a sniper for the San Antonio Spurs, like 4 years ago, he got like a 4 years, $64 million contract with the Wizards, and he's been overpaid ever since. He hasn't really done much, so he's more of a liability than an asset. Hopefully they can rekindle it. That would be great because he was the Latvian laser, they call him, was really money back in the day. But this really surprised me because apparently they also had been trying to move KP all day with no takers, or at least not no takers, but no viable suitors. And so
nothing better than this. Yeah.
And so this is what they got. This is what they got stuck with. I think this is an absolute W for the Wizards, especially if you're trying to get younger.
The reports were that like the Wizards were going to try to do something at this deadline to convince Bradley Beal to stay. If you're going to convince him to stay, like trading for Kristaps Porzingis is that. It's name power. It's star power. It's like fans want to watch that power. That's a lot more of like a of an exciting just piece and guy to be playing with, I think, than Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans are. Including for the reasons you said, which were that Spencer Dinwiddie came out and said something along the lines of he tried to come in and be a leader when he first got to Washington and just kind of got shut down. That's like,
yeah.
So as much as we're talking about like Spencer Dinwiddie's having a down year, it also seems to me like that was kind of forced on him, right? Like, I think he just like from the jump just did not gel, just did not fit. And a couple of years ago, like on the Nets, you know, pre Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and all that, when it was like him and D'Angelo Russell was like not so far off being an all-star. It was a 20 point per game score. And I don't think it's going to be completely out of the question that he approaches something like that again with the Dallas Mavericks, who I think are in need of some more like playmaking, ball handling. The narrative was like the Mavericks need to go after a playmaker and ball handler at this deadline. And that's what they got in Spencer Dinwiddie. And in a pretty like tall one at that, which I think is also good because he's not mutually exclusive with Jalen Brunson, right? Because I think the problem you could run into is like, can you run a lineup that has two guards and like one of them is Jalen Brunson, right? Because you're going to want, I think, two out of the three of Spencer Dinwiddie, Luka Doncic, and Jalen Brunson on the court most of the time.
One thing that my friend Ayush here talked about once this deal was made, and I never would have thought about this, but I think it's a pretty good observation, is that Spencer Dinwiddie is like watered down version of Luka Doncic, sort of, in that they're technically point guards, but you wouldn't think of it based off of their size because they're, you know, tall. They're both like 6'6". Luka's probably a little wider than Spencer Dinwiddie, but they're both pretty strong. Like, they can throw their bodies around. Luka's probably more of a passer than Spencer Dinwiddie is, but, you know, Spencer's been playing the point guard position for the last 5 years, and they both are kind of like slower but more methodical scorers. And so maybe they work side by side, but maybe that's a little too redundant for the Mavericks.
I don't know. I mean, I see what you're getting at, and also it feels like heinous to compare Spencer Dinwiddie to Luka Doncic. I guess I see what you're saying. Going back to Davis Bertans, like, I don't know what's going on with him because like he's a 40% three-point shooter in his career and is shooting 31% this season, right? So as you said, has not been the Latvian laser. But, you know, hopefully he bounces back, hopefully with a playmaker like Luka Doncic on his team. Like, you're going to get open shots. You're going to get open threes, right? Like, just go stay in the corner and like, he's going to find you. So I don't know. I can see this.
They're replacing one Latvian with another, like one super tall Latvian sniper with another.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Coming off years.
Yeah. And Kristaps is great, but a lot of the, I guess, sort of responses to this trade have been like, There was one quote, and I wish I knew who it was from, but because it was funny and it was good. It was like,
you gotta start paying attention to who you listen to.
I know. I was scrolling through Twitter and I see all this stuff, but it was like, I should start saving it. But somebody was like, he's called the unicorn because you don't see him very often, which is to say, like, he's the unicorn, right? Like, he's incredible, but like in flashes, right? Like. Once every like 10 games, he's the unicorn. You know what I mean?
I thought that was a reference to him being injured all the time.
It's that too. It's the fact that like there was also like the Mavericks tweeted like yesterday or 2 days ago, like, see you soon, Kristaps Porzingis. Well, he was like injured, like on the bench, right? And he was dribbling a ball on the sideline in like street clothes. You know what I mean? And so it's like the reference, like they were like, okay, like can't wait to like have you back from injury. And they traded him. So it's like, I think it was on Freezing Cold Takes on Instagram being like, yeah, like that's no longer true.
Can't wait to have this guy back in a Mavs uniform.
So it's both, right? It's like, it's the injuries and it's the fact that like he's inconsistent as hell. Like, Kristaps Porzingis does not have right now the confidence, the killer mentality to think that he had in New York, to just like where you would see him just block a shot off of the backboard, pin somebody on one end, and then like sprint down the court on the other and like dunk from like way, like, you know, three steps out for most people from the basket. I don't know. There's a level of like drive, hunger, fire that I think he's missing. And that's all very like cliche and arbitrary, but I hope for his sake, cause I actually really am a Kristaps fan, that like, that's something that he can rekindle in Washington, because, you know, for Bradley Beal's sake and for the organization's sake, like they need to figure some stuff out, or like it's all going downhill.
The Wizards are, they were at one point first in the Eastern Conference. This is my college hometown team. So I'm a pseudo Wizards fan. They're 2-8 in their last 10, and they've plummeted all the way down to the 11th seed in the East. Not even
a Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's getting season ending wrist surgery too. Like, he just gave up.
Wait, is that true? Season.
Yeah.
What?
Woj tweeted that before the deadline. Yeah, so Bradley Beal's like not even playing the rest. I don't know. Unless all of a sudden he's like, oh, I guess I have Kristaps now, so maybe I won't get that surgery. But the report was like, they were already sliding, and he's like, okay, guess I'm out, and like hope you guys figure some stuff out, and I'll see you next season, or else like, you know, I'm gone. Like, I don't know.
Okay, never mind. I was about to be like, oh, they're about to go for a playoff push. Like, oh no.
I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, like, maybe this is enough to keep Bradley Beal around, because I think that's what it was. It was just like a long shot, the like Hail Mary, like maybe we can keep Bradley Beal move is landing a guy like Kristaps Porzingis. And otherwise, like, I don't think it means a whole lot for the Washington Wizards, because the kind of joke is like Kristaps has not shown up much. There's just been no consistency, as good and as talented as he is for stretches. But on the Mavericks side, like, they're the fifth seed in the West. They're not out of the conversation for like trying to make a deep playoff push. And so does bring in some, I was about to say consistent shooting, but like, you can't say that this season from Davis Bertans and Spencer Dinwiddie, but hopefully at least like more consistent, like being there healthy every night and being there and like showing up and being part of the rotation and whatever, like, and some leadership, some veteran leadership, some ball handling. Like, hopefully that's, it sounds to me like the kind of stuff they were in need of. It still feels like they're short on just straight up talent, like, to match up with some of the other juggernauts of the NBA right now. Like, it's like Devin Booker without his Chris Paul or whatever. Like, I just, it doesn't feel like enough, but
still,
I don't know.
They're still fifth in the East. In the West, they wanted quite a run too.
Yeah. I mean, they're on a 3-game win streak right now. And I think, I'm not sure Kristaps Porzingis played in any of those 3 games. So I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not sure that the fall off losing Porzingis is as big as you would think, because in a strange way, I think they're kind of used to like him not being there. I don't know. I think it's like
interesting.
The way that we imagined this being like a duo for the future, I don't think it's really panned out. I think it's still just like viewed as Luka's team. And now he's got more like solid role players around him. He's got more depth. He's got more shooting. More ball handling. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
All right. Next up, let's go to definitely one of the most shocking moves of the deadline. Happened a day or two ago. Tyrese Haliburton for Domantas Sabonis. There's a big package in there, but that's the headline. The Pacers include Domantas Sabonis, Jeremy Lamb, Justin Holiday, and a 2023 second round pick in exchange for Tyrese Haliburton, Buddy Hield, and Tristan Thompson. I'm going to let you plug what you're going to plug.
Yeah, first and foremost, everybody should go check out the STF solo I just released. I'm literally recording this like an hour after I posted that STF solo, because it's just been like a busy day. But you should go check it out. I talked about why Tyrese Haliburton should have been the franchise cornerstone for the Kings, and they made a mistake in trading him as opposed to De'Aaron Fox. You said this was a shocking deal. I agree with you. I do think it's not surprising that these teams were looking to split up Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner and De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton. I think that they picked the wrong one in Tyrese Haliburton or De'Aaron Fox, the Kings, that is. I think they probably, I don't know. I don't think they picked wrong necessarily out of Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner, because I'm not sure that like Miles Turner is your franchise cornerstone anyway. I think now Tyrese Haliburton is. But I guess part of my problem with this trade as a whole is like, I didn't think that these two teams would make those swaps with each other, because they're two teams that are caught in no man's land, that are caught in like, we don't know what our direction is. And like, we want to be better than we are, but we're just not that good. And we also don't want to rebuild. And so both of these teams made very lateral moves. Like, neither of these teams are going to bottom out, and neither of these teams are going to go make the playoffs. So it's like, you're both just still caught in this weird no man's land play-in zone. At least though, for the Indiana Pacers, you have this bright future of like a pick and roll, pick and pop duo of Miles Turner and Tyrese Haliburton, right? And you still have Malcolm Brogdon, right? And like you hope that at some point TJ Warren's going to be back and things will come together. I like how much they've freed up Miles Turner to like see what to explore like what he can be on offense and surround him with one of the best pick and roll guards in the league like already. The Tyrese Haliburton like advanced stats are just awesome, but like he's also just like one of the most efficient shooters in the league. Go check out that video. Like Tyrese is sick, and I got a lot of good clips in there. But yeah.
Just a moment, listener. Connor's selling him short. Like definitely one of the best individual videos we've posted in our 4 years. He talks over the game tape and breaks it down really precisely. So I highly recommend you check that out.
No, I appreciate it. And it's only on YouTube. So like, for anybody who's listening on podcasts, like go check out our YouTube channel. It doesn't really make sense for me to post that as a podcast audio too, because most of what I'm saying is referencing the video. So we'll probably post clips of that on our social medias and things like that, but just go watch the full thing on YouTube. It's like 8 minutes and you won't regret it.
Yeah. Now that I've complimented you, let me tell you why I disagree. I think that the whole direction thing, I think it gets overplayed a little bit now because everyone's in love with tanking or contending. I think that, yes, Pacers have been in like playoff no man's land for a while, being like a 4 or 5 seed, getting eliminated in round 1 or 2. But I don't think that you have to bottom out. One, because there's absolutely no fan base for the Pacers right now. Tickets are as low as $1. And the owner, honestly, for good reason, doesn't want to tank because – you know, like they're just going to lose so much money. So, you know, the NBA is a business. So that's why they don't want to, you know, tanking at the first overall pick, which again, there's only a 14% chance that you get the first overall pick, even if you have the worst team in the league. Secondly, I don't know how they could have bottomed out without having a worse trade than what they got, because they got a young player and they still got some other value in Buddy Hield. I think Tristan Thompson was more or less a throwaway, but I think, you know, getting Buddy Hield, that's still an asset that certain people want. I'm surprised they didn't flip them in the next 24 hours.
I should clarify. I was mostly talking about the Kings. I do not like this deal at all for the Kings. I actually do really like it for the Pacers because I am really, really high on Tyrese Haliburton. And I think like they got not the best player in the trade today, but by far the player with the most upside. And I think Tyrese projects to be like a future superstar.
Yeah. Okay. So I agree with that. Although people were bashing the Kings for this so hard. I get why they made this move, because like, dude, like,
but why
Tyrese Haliburton could be a superstar. He could also be, you know, like a slightly better Lonzo Ball, in that, you know, great shooter, good defender, good creator. But not, you know, not like the 1 or 2 on a championship team. So if you're not getting a 1 or 2 on a championship team, if you're getting a 3 on a championship team, Domantas Sabonis is a 3 on a championship team, and that's a guaranteed thing. And so while, again, I would rather have Tyrese Haliburton, and I like this move better for the Pacers than for the Kings, I understand why they did it, because Domantas Sabonis is really freaking good at basketball, as you saw in last night in his opener for the Sacramento Kings. They beat the Minnesota Timberwolves by 20, and Sabonis had like 23 and 14 rebounds.
No, he's awesome. Like that's not to say – that's why I'm like, it's a lateral move though, is I guess like, I think that if you're trying to create like upside here for the long term, like I understand. Basically what I'm saying is the Kings made a move here to try to be good right now and try to like win more games.
They've missed the playoffs for the past 15
years. I understand that. But it's like, you're just going to make the play-in this year and then not make it to the first round of the playoffs. That's going to be the result of this, I would guess. And I feel pretty confident saying that, right? Say that again.
I said they could snag the 8 seed, and
let me know how far behind they are. I mean,
I'm searching it right now. Right now,
I just
they're the 12 seed. They're 5 games back of the 8 seed.
Teams
ahead of them are Trailblazers, who they're gonna fall. Pelicans, Lakers, Clippers, Timberwolves. So I don't know if they're gonna.
Nobody's dropping except for the Trailblazers. I would think. Right. So like then that makes them the 10 seed. Right. They're in the play-in anywhere between 8 and 10. Right. And even if like they're in the play-in, but like so are the Lakers and they're like above the Lakers, like I would be shocked if the Lakers lost in the play-in.
Dude, right. Like the Lakers lost yesterday to Anthony Simon, Jusuf Nurkić, and our You're high school wrong. Varsity basketball team.
You're not wrong. It's the reason that I'm like, it's just lateral for the Kings. It's like you're selling the one guy on your roster who I feel like has the chance to take you to the next level. The guy who has the chance to be like the face of the franchise altering, right? De'Aaron Fox is awesome. He's a 25-point per game scorer last year, right? He's really, really damn good. But in terms of like, if you're gonna go buy a big who's 25 years old and an all-star in Sabonis, right? Like that's a damn good player. Do not get me wrong.
He's 25 too.
Match him with a pick and roll guard. That's Tyrese Halliburton. That is not De'Aaron Fox. Right? Match him with a guy who spaces the floor and is not going to interfere by like trying to drive to the basket. That's Tyrese Halliburton. That's not De'Aaron Fox, right? The stat that I use in that video is that Tyrese Halliburton, of all players in the league this season who've taken over 300 jumpers, Tyrese Halliburton ranks sixth in effective field goal percentage. And you were the one who sent me that graphic. It's awesome. Like Tyrese is such a good shooter. He's got such good vision. His defense is still a work in progress, but he's just so lengthy that he just like makes up for weird gambles and stuff with just his length. He's awesome in transition. I just think he just projects to be so good, right? And it's like, I don't understand why sell on that in the second year when I think De'Aaron Fox hasn't shown that he's like still getting better and hasn't shown the same like leaps and signs of improvement. And I like it. I can see why it's an attractive idea to go try to make a push for the playoffs after you haven't been there in 15 years. This still isn't a playoff team. Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox.
They're two all-star caliber guys. And they, and by the way, the Sacramento Kings have not had two all-star caliber guys since I started watching the NBA.
No, true. That's true. Like since true. Like Chris and Webber, so, right?
If I'm a Kings fan, yeah, I'm pissed we got rid of like, you know, probably our best individual draft pick in terms of like De'Aaron Fox was the fifth overall pick. Tyrese was like 12 or whatever. But, you know, like I'm excited because trading for Sabonis, you just traded for the best King since DeMarcus Cousins. And so just appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You trade for the best King since DeMarcus Cousins. Definitely the best big man.
You make a good point. That is true. It's just like, I don't, As a guy who's like very into like NBA philosophy and team building, it pains me to see teams just like be mediocre and like sell on the potential to be more than like mediocre. You know what I mean? I don't see the Kings with their current roster construction ever making it out of the first round of the playoffs. I could see Tyrese Halliburton being the guy to bring you out of the first round of the playoffs. And you just gave him to the Pacers, who are a team that's like trying to rebuild and trying to build something up, right? Like I see that as like a good situation for the Pacers, which is like they take a step back this year maybe because they don't have Sabonis, who's an all-star caliber guy, but for the future projects their team projects to be better, right? Because I think that Halliburton is that good. And so I get it. It's just, here's the thing. And on the topic of tanking, because since you brought it up, like everybody should go check out the interview that we did with Jake Fisher, who's an awesome reporter and writer about the NBA still like right now, obviously, but we did an episode with him probably about a year ago where he talked about his book, which is all about tanking. And so I always think of him when we talk about tanking, and he made a really good, you know, case for like why tanking is so popular in the NBA right now, even as they've made the lottery odds worse for the teams at the bottom. But like, you have to remember that the Philadelphia 76ers, who we're talking about, is like a team that could go win the East this year. Tanked for five seasons, drafted terribly, right? Like of the top picks that they had, right? It was Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, Jahlil Okafor, and Joel Embiid. One of them is on the team right now. Like one of them is playing high level basketball. They missed on the other three. Being at the bottom of the draft, like you don't necessarily have to get the number one overall pick. If you put yourself in position to go get your franchise guy, 2, 3, 4 seasons in a row, even if you don't draft well, eventually one of those guys is probably going to land and turn into a franchise altering guy. That was Joel Embiid, who we're talking about as like him and James Harden are about to go, you know, light the league on fire. Tyrese Halliburton, I don't think is like the number one guy on a franchise like that, right? But if I think if you sell and if you start to rebuild and start that rebuild with Tyrese Halliburton, you end up as the 12th seed in the West. You have a chance for a top four pick. You might land somebody at the top of this draft that's like going to be next, the next, you know, Joel Embiid. And even if you don't do it next this year, then maybe next year, Tyrese Halliburton's 1 year better. The team's still not very good. Then maybe then you land that guy, right? But I don't think that the room for De'Aaron Fox or Domantas Sabonis to go like be the guy that like takes you where you want to be as an NBA franchise, like the promised land, not just mediocrity, not just not sucking. Like, I don't think De'Aaron Fox or Domantas Sabonis is that guy. And Tyrese Halliburton probably isn't the number one guy doing that, but like as a pick and roll partner with somebody who is, like, I can envision that. Or as like, you know, the guy as the guard who's like playing with the wing, who's that, like, I can see that. I don't know. Maybe that's just a disagreement in philosophy, but I think you should either be trying to make a push to be in contention like towards the second, third rounds of the playoffs, or you should be taking a step back and try. And if you don't think you can get there, then like retooling to get there eventually. Right. And that's all with the end goal of making a championship. And your argument is more like, that's not the Pacers' goal. That's not the Kings' goal. They just need to build a fan base and make money. Also yeah. valid. Right. Yeah. So in that way I see it, but.
And so, yeah, you're like, I agree with most of what you're saying. Right.
Yeah.
I just also think that it's not the only way, especially in like a real life world with like, you know, like actual consequences and needs to fulfill. And also, you know, you can add guys via smart moves around the perimeter. Like the Grizzlies, they didn't tank. Like I'm pretty sure they didn't have like a top three out. They moved up in the draft and they were bad for 1 year. And then they got John Morant, and now they've just
yeah,
moved around the edges.
But that's what I'm saying is you need to go land your John Morant. The yeah. Kings aren't going to land their John Morant while being the like, you know, the 10th seed in the West or the 8th seed in the West, right? Like you need to be a bottom three seed in your conference, like most likely, or you just need to get incredible lottery luck, which happens, right? Like the Pelicans landed Zion when they had like a 4% chance in the first overall pick. It happens, but to give yourself the best shot, like you got to be pretty low in the rankings. And then, so like this is getting a little bit off topic, but I'm glad that we're talking about it because I think this is a really interesting conversation. But I think that the way that I view that, like the NBA championship building philosophy right now, is that you have to go get your franchise guy. I mentioned Joel Embiid. You just brought up John Morant, right? It's Luka Doncic. It's Giannis. Like, you're in the lottery. You suck. You find that one guy. And in another case is the Suns. The Suns, even though they were only the 13th, they only got the 13th pick, they landed Devin Booker in the lottery. Once you land once you find a guy in the lottery that is your franchise guy, then you start drafting guys that are probably a little bit older and a little bit more proven, a Cam Johnson, a Mikal Bridges, towards the end of the lottery, that are maybe their third, fourth year of coming out of college, but that you know exactly what you're getting, right? Like Mikal Bridges won two national championships with Villanova, came into the league and was already one of the best perimeter defenders and three-point shooters that the league has to offer. And he's still, I think, on his rookie contract and about to like be on, or maybe he's like his extension is just kicking in, something like that, right? But like you just went to the finals with Mikal Bridges as your starting small forward while he was on his rookie contract, and he was like, you know, fit seamlessly. He didn't look like a young guy out there. He looked like he belonged. And so I think the championship building formula right now, right? And maybe the Suns are a weird example because they have DeAndre Ayton and they have Devin Booker, but I think the formula is you land your franchise guy, maybe you land your franchise two guys in the lottery. Then you draft some older guys around them who are on rookie contracts but ready to go, and then you just have to get somebody via trade or if you get somebody via free agency, right? So the Suns landed their Chris Paul, right? Or like the Hawks have been doing this with Trae Young, right? Where like you landed Trae Young in the top five, and now you're doing the moves around the edges to surround them. But you have to get your franchise guy with most of the time a top five pick.
Yeah, and to your point, free agency is not really an option for either the Pacers or the Kings, right?
Yeah.
It's an option for five, maybe 10 teams in the NBA.
Yep.
Because big markets are a thing. And we're spoiled to have that as Knicks fans, even though it hasn't really worked in our favor. So I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I'm just not faulting the Kings too heavily, given the context that they haven't made the roster in 15 years. Or they haven't made the playoffs in 15 years. Not making the playoffs in 15 years and then saying to your fan base, hey, we're going to try to intentionally be bad. Like, I would be heated as a Kings fan. So I understand. And I feel like most people are not as philosophical as us about constructing NBA rosters.
You're right. I guess I see Tyrese Halliburton as a guy, if I'm a Pacers fan, that I'm like, wow, like, he's our future, right? Like, I can see Tyrese Halliburton being a face of a franchise. I can't really see that for De'Aaron Fox or Domantas Sabonis. And I hope they prove me wrong. I really do. I hope
they prove you wrong, too.
But
next trade up, we have CJ McCollum getting traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. The whole package is CJ McCollum, Larry Nance, and Tony Snell going from the Blazers to the Pelicans in exchange for Josh Hart, Tomas Satoransky, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Didi Luzada. And then I believe there are two second round picks and a protected first round pick going to Portland.
Yeah. This one's interesting because I think that the idea behind it is that Zion is going to come back at some point this season in time for him, Brandon Ingram, and now CJ McCollum to make a playoff push. Pretty exciting. Like the problem with it is like that's a big if. That's a big if.
We're in no position to speculate the timeline of Zion, so we're just gonna have to wait and see.
We are we're in wait and see mode. And it's exciting because like I hope that Zion's back and I hope they do make that playoff push, because I think that a healthy Zion is a top 10 player in the NBA. And so you give him another all-star in Brandon Ingram on the wing and now a competent like veteran guard, like that's a recipe for a pretty good team. Jonas Valanciunas fits well next to Zion, and Devontae Graham like is a good 3-point shooter. And like, I don't have that much else positive to say about Devontae Graham, but because mostly because he's compared to Lonzo Ball, right? Like that's the downside. I also think for the Pelicans, like you were able to get CJ McCollum for a very low asking price because the Blazers should have traded him 2 years ago.
They should have, man.
They should have traded. Like we've been saying this, right? Like you just waited too long.
Way too long.
You just waited too long.
The value goes down. CJ's dealt with injuries. I don't know how old he is, but I think age is starting to become a little bit of a factor. It's a question mark of what happens. Who was a current example of what happens when you wait too long? Maybe Ben Simmons. I was thinking Bradley Beal when we were feeling out what the trade value for Bradley Beal is. Like, you know, like now he's playing a lot worse than last year, or Julius Randle, and now he's playing a lot worse than last year. And so deals that were on the table last year are no longer on the table. And you know, you're the Washington Wizards throwing your arms up, wishing you had that last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what a good, I'm having trouble with another like equivalent example, but I guess the deal is that like a lot of people are, I think, saying you didn't get equal value back for CJ McCollum, which is true. If you're the Blazers, but like, that's not how the NBA works. Right. The same thing that I said, it's all situational and like contextual, right? The same thing is true for the Philadelphia 76ers. The way that I said, like, Brooklyn won the trade. Brooklyn got more value in the trade. The same way that here the Pelicans got more value in the trade. But like, if you're the Blazers or if you're the 76ers, like, it's not necessarily a loss if it's like you really had to make that decision and that was the best option that was available to you. If the Blazers really just had no better offers on the table, which why would they not make this trade if there were a better offer on the table, right? Like NBA GMs are really smart dudes. Like they're not like I don't understand why fans are like, how did you not get equal value back for CJ McCollum? It's like, it's situational. Like you have to think about, like,
the market determines the price.
Exactly. The market determines the price. Like how many teams are there out there that both want CJ McCollum and that can offer you something that's like CJ McCollum, right? Like the Lakers would have taken CJ McCollum, but like for what? Like the Talen Horton Tucker and a pick package?
And but like I'm not, contracts are a thing too. You have to.
Yeah, like I'm not getting excited about that. You know what I mean? Like, so, and then also you're like giving him to the Lakers, who are like a contender to go like win the championship. So why would you give him to the Lakers anyway? I don't know. Like, and that's assuming that you could even pull that off. Like, I'd have to like, you'd have to exactly like pull up the NBA trade machine and like see if you can make the contracts match. But exactly what you're saying is true. Like, the market term is the price, and that the value of CJ McCollum, regardless of what you think it is, like a fan when you're watching and seeing how good he is only what the rest of the league is like willing to bid for him.
Yeah. And just to emphasize that this wasn't like some panicked rush move, like honestly, like the Harden thing could have been. It's not like he requested a trade, you know, 4 hours before the deadline. This was a premeditated thing. Dame and CJ both came out saying, like, you know, we knew this day would come. It's been a long time coming, but, you know, it still feels awful. So this wasn't I'm sure people in the Blazers organization knew this was happening. It was so obvious that I read a report saying that CJ helped hand negotiate the trade.
The Pelicans, yeah.
Which is kind of awesome, by the way. CJ McCollum is like, is one of my favorite NBA players. I've talked about this on the pod before, because he's just like this really smart guy. He studied journalism at Lehigh rigorously. It's not like he was just a student athlete, but really just an athlete. And he's the head of the NBA Players Association. He's the president. He took over Chris Paul's reign. So he's a really smart guy. And for him to like help orchestrate his own trade, that shows loyalty to Portland. That shows, you know, ability for him. It shows flexibility on the Portland management that, you know, we're going to do right by this guy, help him pick where he wants to go. Maybe criticizing them for that, but I don't really see much wrong with that.
No, I think that a big thing in the NBA is like trying to do right by your guys, like the guys who have been loyal to you, like trying to do right by them back. Like I really respect that from an organization. Another thing to mention though is I'm blanking on what the guy's name is, but he's the interim GM for the Trailblazers right now. They fired Neil O'Shea earlier this season, and then have proceeded to make two of the biggest trades, or like a couple of the biggest trades in their franchise's history, in that they're like hitting total like reset right now around Dame. Like this is a huge like direction changing move. Speaking of like the directions that we were talking about earlier, like you're totally changing yourself up from a team that was like in the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago, or I don't know if it was the West, was it the West? It wasn't the Western Conference Finals. It was second round when Dame hit the like walk off shot against the Thunder. That was, you know, you're going from that team that's making a deep playoff push to a team that's like in full rebuild mode and that has basically no rotational NBA players outside of Damian Lillard, who's out for the season, right? Like, that's a huge change to make, all while you haven't officially named somebody as your GM. And then to build off of that, like, I think part of the reason that I can see why Trailblazers fans are so upset, because right now your team has you've sold everything and gotten very little in terms of like young talent or like legit rotational guys in return. Like the best guy that you got in return in any of these trades is Josh Hart, who I'm a huge fan of because I like watched a lot of Villanova with Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson and all of them. Like I love Josh Hart. If he's the best player you're getting back in return for CJ McCollum, as I mentioned earlier, you're losing value, right?
It's insane to me that they traded CJ McCollum, Robert Covington, who honestly, he doesn't really have that much value anymore. And Norman Powell. And Larry Nance. He's a great role player.
Yeah.
And you got back one protected first round pick.
Yeah. And by the way, they traded away Gary Trent to get Norman Powell. They traded away a first round pick to get Robert Covington. And they traded away a first round pick to get Larry Nance. That's the thing that if you're a Trailblazers fan, I think even more upset than you should be about like the returns that you're getting right now. I think the reason to be frustrated is that you bought high and you sold low. You bought high because you were desperate because you wanted to build a contender around Damian Lillard, who is disgruntled. And so you're like, we have to be good right now. Let's sell all our future first round picks and be good now. Things went haywire. It didn't really work out. The team wasn't good anyway. And then you hit the panic button again and said, okay, now let's sell everything before it's too late. But now you're selling low while none of those guys have value, and while none of the other teams around the league are like bidding up those guys. You know what I mean? And so while you paid first round picks to get all those guys, you're not getting first round picks in return. And that's why I say, I'm a big believer in like the direction thing is, and like I think that like if you're the Trailblazers from like 2 years ago, it's like maybe you have to look at the fact that like you have Dame and CJ, and you're gonna be like, okay, like can we ever really escape the kind of purgatory that we're in of like we're good, but we have a small backcourt that like can't really defend, and like they're not as the 1-2 punch enough to like win us a championship or make the Western Conference Finals. Like you kind of have to look at that and say, okay, maybe it's time to change something up. Like not like I guess like proactively rather than reactively. Because I think when you start acting reactively to Dame then all of a sudden being upset, that's when you're like, okay, let's panic buy and trade all our first round picks. And then when he's goes after the season with an abdominal injury, you're sitting low in the standings, you're barely going to make the playoffs or the play-in, and it's like, okay, now let's panic sell. It's like when you panic, when you get desperate, and when you make the decision to pick a direction when it's too late and when you're forced into it, I think that's when you lose value the most.
Yeah. And just for the record, like it is so easy for us to sit here and say that yeah. in hindsight.
Yeah.
Like that's like, you know, there's always like the meme tweet about like, man, you know, if I was in the stock market, you know, I would just like buy the stocks when they were low and then I would just sell them at a higher price. Like, oh,
yeah.
Like, stop that. I want to write
that
down. It's
not that easy.
That's game changing advice. It totally not that easy. You only know you bought high and you sold low in hindsight. You only know, you know, it didn't work out in hindsight. 3 years ago, there's no pressing event to make the Trailblazers look hard in the mirror and say, you know, we should trade our second best player who's a fringe all-star every year. Like there's nothing, you know, pressing their movements day to day to do that. It's just in hindsight, you know, every moment was precious that they could have, you know, pulled the trigger and didn't.
Man, I really love that this episode, well, which is just like a trade deadline recap, has turned into like basketball philosophy with the Connors. That's really fun, and I think we like we both made good cases for I don't know in defense and in criticism of these teams. I think like we started off the episode kind of talking about it, but like this was a really fun trade deadline. Like there's just a lot of like good stuff to talk about, and like this is part of the reason we love the NBA, because we are going to wake up tomorrow and the day after watching guys and like being getting ready to watch guys make their debuts for teams. And like that Brooklyn Nets team and that Philadelphia 76ers team, like those are new teams. You know what I mean? Like yeah. They're the same teams, like maybe the same best player, but like totally different rosters, right? And like very different teams that are going to be out there competing like for a championship potentially. So it's like, it really spices the NBA up, and it's just like, it's a fun time of the year. And so I'm glad we've been pumping out content and having a good time with it.
I agreed, man. Crazy deadline. This is one of my favorite episodes. And thank you all so much for watching. If you enjoyed this video on YouTube, please leave it a like and subscribe. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so go follow us there. Follow us on Instagram at Space the Floor Podcast and on Twitter at Space the Floor. And thank you so much. My name is Connor Gielan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
And see you next time.
Peace. Shout out to Tyrese Halliburton.